Ready to redefine your talent strategy? Let's make Redefine the word of the year for your success. Introducing RAS, Recruitment as a Service. Outsource your talent strategy with the O'Connor Group. Our four-tiered approach is crafted to align with your business, whether you're launching a startup or leading a thriving corporation. Our cost-effective solutions are designed to elevate your business and enhance your people strategy, ensuring scalability and strategic growth. Redefine your recruitment strategy with RAS.
Hi there, everybody, and welcome to Shadow Her Podcast. I'm Marcia O'Connor. I'm your host for today. I have a dear friend of mine going to talk about her amazing story, Marcy Schenkweiler from For Pete's Sake. And Marcy, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Marcia, for having me.
My pleasure. My pleasure. I'm so excited. Even though today is snowing, I usually see you down the shore in Sea Isle, and we're basically passing each other at Acme. But today, not so much. We are basically all cuddled in. It's snowing outside here, guys. But the thing about Marcy, it makes her so dynamic, is that she just is a female that gets it. She put an idea together, unfortunate circumstances, and she's going to go through all that. But she has a great background. She is a Philadelphia native. I mean, LaSalle undergrad, and then Temple for her law degrees. So she is true to the form of being a true Philadelphian. But nonetheless, Marcy, let's talk about, you know, a little bit about you and a little bit how you got started For Pete's Sake.
Sounds good. Thank you. Well, I think first and foremost, I am the oldest of nine children. My mom had nine kids. My dad grew up in a family-owned business. He was a baker. We have a bakery in Sea Isle City, New Jersey. Learned the hard work ethic at a very young age. We always joke that my mom and dad had so many children because they needed all the free labor they could get. So in the bakery business, but I was really fortunate to grow up in a great, great household, you know, and have two amazing parents who really taught me a lot. And I continue to learn from them and my siblings.
Oh, yeah, you do. And it's interesting. I have one of my girls on my team. She's one of nine, but she's the youngest. And so it must have been interesting. And so what was it like also being the oldest? Because I felt as if like you probably were the biggest babysitter, too.
I babysat a lot. You know, it's funny. I think my brothers and sisters today make fun of me in a sense because I always found solace in reading. That was like the quiet time. Like I would literally go into a room and close the door, most likely the bathroom where no one could lock it. And I would read. And that was really the quiet time I had because there was a lot of responsibility growing up, but I wouldn't change it for the world.
You went to school, you were music education, and then you became a lawyer. What was that path? What were you thinking?
You know, it was my first, and you know, you talk about people being put into your life. I really, when I graduated from LaSalle, you know, I took a position and it was a 2-year kind of leadership training position. And it really was my mentor there who said to me, you know, you would make a great attorney. I said, oh, that's a great idea. So his name is Jim Smith. He encouraged me to go to law school. You know, really worked with me in scheduling, and I worked for him for the 5 years that I went to that I worked there and went to undergraduate, you know, the evening program in Temple's Law. So, you know, I think just being open to those ideas and people looking at different skill sets you have and then listening attentively, right? And then not being afraid to take that first step. Like, don't be stuck in indecision. I think when he said to me, you make a great lawyer, my response was, hey, that's a great idea. Like, let me look and how I could accomplish that. So I did that and then kept going to law school because I liked it so much and enjoyed the tax. I mean, I loved the numbers. Then I went and started, you know, a career as a tax attorney.
And then what happened?
Well, my first husband, Pete, ended up getting a diagnosis of cancer. He was 29 years old. You hear the word and you just don't know, you know, what it's going to entail. And essentially, he passed away 1 year almost from the date of his diagnosis. But I do remember, you know, this is before like you could look, search on the internet and computers and, you know, cell phones. I ended up talking to a renowned oncologist down in Indiana, Dr. Larry Einhorn, who actually called me back, and I chased him down because he was the lead oncologist for testicular cancer, which is what my husband had. And I remember his piece. He actually called me, and I remember his piece of advice. He said, you know, think about how you're going to spend your time. So with that piece of advice in mind, you know, I did make some transitions. You know, I took a leave of absence and worked part-time for different attorneys that I knew to give me some more flexibility. And Pete was in treatment for an extended period of that. And during that, like, our families had a great party for us, a beef and beer. And they gave us some money. And I said to my husband, Pete, I said, Pete, this is great. We can pay the mortgage because we had just bought a house and we couldn't even afford an azalea bush because I didn't realize landscaping was so expensive. And Pete said, no, we're not going to take the money and pay the mortgage. We're going to take the money and we're going to spend some time away. And that's what we did. About a week later, we hopped on an airplane and went on a respite from cancer for ourselves. And it really was such a profound experience for us, you know, for he as a patient and myself as a caregiver, in a whirlwind of a year, that we came back changed. You know, we came back a different person, you know, a person with resilience, a person, and, you know, a couple knowing that no matter what was going to transpire, you know, love can conquer cancer. Mm-hmm. It's not an easy journey, but it can be a journey that can be conquered when you recognize that, you know, the disease can't destroy what you have between and among, you know, between two people who love one another, among friends and family who are carrying you along that journey. So it was profound. It's a profound experience that today has shaped my life.
Absolutely has. And boy, have you done amazing things with that. And yeah, I agree with you. It will never change a love for somebody. And it's a horrible disease. But, you know, you had to go through it. You did the best you can. And, you know, things happened. But how did you get started? Like, what was that thing that you said, I'm going to do this. I'm going to make a difference. And I'm going to start this.
No, I went back to... I went back to work after he passed away, and you know, it was challenging because my priorities had changed. And I, you know, I had some mentors that I was talking to. It was Peter Federico, who recently passed away, had a company that did a lot of nonprofit work, and, you know, I told him I had this idea of being able to provide respite to other young adult cancer patients and their families. So, you know, I wrote up what's called a case for support, which is really kind of what is your story? Like, what do you want to accomplish? The who, what, where, when, why? It's almost like a business plan without the plan part, but with the emotional part. Because running a nonprofit, it's about people. Like, that's it. That's our mission. So it's really the people part. And I shared it with some of Pete's oncologists and some friends in this case for support. And I got a lot of feedback from them. You know, and it was a one profound moment on a Friday afternoon that I was sitting there, and Jim Murray, who was the founder of Ronald McDonald House, among other accomplishments, and who's a great man, he called me one afternoon and on this Friday, and I said, Jim, I don't know where I belong. Like, I'm just feeling a little despondent where I'm at and where my direction should be and what my path would be. You know, and he said to me, Marcy, you know, there's only one of you, and, you know, you will have the ability to accomplish and help other people. But you have to make that decision, you know, and it has to come from you. And it was that day when I walked in and I told my boss, who had been absolutely amazing during Pete's illness, that I was going to, you know, start a nonprofit for cancer patients, and really kind of put my arms around it. And he said, okay. And then he supported us. So that was really like a proud moment where I made and jumped into it. I did put it in his obituary notice the day after Pete died. I you know, he gave me strict instructions, like, please put in my obituary notice that you would like to, for donations to go to For Pete's Sake, which is a nonprofit that I want to, that, you know, I'd like you to do. And I did do that, but I didn't really put the heart behind it, you know, at that moment. It wasn't really that day where I resigned from my job and said, okay, like, we can do this. And there was a lot of mentorship between those two moments that gives you the courage to do it and the confidence.
Yeah, but it's not easy. It's not easy to quit a job, number one, and, you know that you're doing this and moving it forward and, you know, getting it going to get where it's at today. And I think it's really the journey behind it that I think we want to hear more about. But I think it's also interesting because you knew that you wanted to help others and you wanted to do all that. But when was it basically that said, you know, we're onto something. I feel like this is my mission in life. This is what I'm going to be doing.
I lived it. So I knew personally, like, what that respite did for me. And I remember profound moments, even years later, of what transpired, you know, because one positive piece during cancer is this respite. You know, it is joyful. It can be emotional. It can be painful, but the overall piece of a respite is really joyful. So I think it was my personal experience with Pete. But then people started hearing about what I was doing. And and one day the phone rang, and this is when the phones were attached to the wall, right? So the phone rang and it was this man, James Miller, who still supports us. And he talked about his sister who had pancreatic cancer. And he said, you know, my family's done everything we can to help her. Like, can you help her? And we helped her that summer, July of 2000. And when I saw what transpired between Barbara, her husband, and her young son, you know, when you help one person, like, you know, deep down inside that there's that gut experience that what we're doing is profound. And when you see that, when you actually can touch it and feel it and see it and hear it and witness it, it just takes it to a whole nother level. And it was really, you know, I think it was James Miller's phone call that really said, like, this is it. Like, we are jumping in full steam ahead. And we did.
That's awesome. Well, I want to hear more about that. Right now, we're going to take a quick break to hear some of our sponsors for this day's program. But stay tuned, everybody. This is Shadow Her. I'm Marcia O'Connor, and we'll be right back.
Ready to redefine your talent strategy? Let's make Redefine the word of the year for your success. Introducing RAS, Recruitment as a Service. Outsource your talent strategy with the O'Connor Group. Our four-tiered approach is crafted to align with your business, whether you're launching a startup or leading a thriving corporation. Our cost-effective solutions are designed to elevate your business and enhance your people strategy, ensuring scalability and strategic growth. Redefine your recruitment strategy with RAS.
And welcome back again. This is Shadow Her Podcast, and I'm here with my lovely guest, Marcy Schenkweiler. She is the CEO and founder of For Pete's Sake. And we were just talking about the journey for Pete's Sake and, you know, how she has gotten here and why she started it. But I thought we would go more into detail about, you know, the whole journey and how many families she has basically helped. So, Marcy, keep on going.
Well, thank you. Well, so, you know, when you talk about, like, being an entrepreneur too, you know, so I look back on those first days, like, I didn't know how to run a nonprofit, right? Like, I talked about different people that have mentored me in that process, but I also think it's really important too. Like, I wasn't afraid to ask for help, right? And I did a lot of asking those first couple of years. You know, I didn't know operations. So I asked some of my friends from LaSalle University, you know, who are in operations, can you help? You know, I didn't know about marketing. So I asked some people that I knew about marketing, can you help? You know, we had different people volunteer, a lot of in-kind services, which really are so, so critical in the nonprofit realm. Mm-hmm. And surrounding yourself with people who are smarter than you is, you know, it can be challenging. Yet it is the most, if you really want to be specific to your mission and you really want to move your mission forward, you have to do that.
Absolutely.
Like that's the role of an entrepreneur. You know, yep. I mean, let's bring people on board and let's be able to use all their talents collectively and collaboratively. So it was those first couple of years, you know, we unveiled a logo, we unveiled a mission statement. You know, we did some cocktail parties, like we're friends and families. We started a board, which has evolved, you know, with the needs of the organization. So has the volunteer, you know, space evolved too. Mm-hmm. So, you know, looking back on it, there was so many collective voices that really came together. It wasn't always easy. Like I remember a lot of tears too in that beginning part, right? You know, and some fear, but you know, at the end of the day, you put your head in the pillow and you go back to that phone call, and you go back to that, you know, to Barb, who needed our help. Mm-hmm. And when there's a need and when there's a demand, you know, our job is to answer.
So how do you help families now? Walk me through when you hear of a family in need and going through some really tough times around cancer, what does For Pete's Sake do?
So we are unique in our space. And I call it, we are very, very focused on respite. So we work with oncology professionals. And they nominate families based on some clinical assessment factors that are really around, you know, financial, psychosocial, emotional, spiritual, and physical health. Mm-hmm. And we look at those factors. They nominate patients to our program. And when a patient comes into our program, the expectation is that we will send them on a 6-day respite. And that respite really is to provide family health and well-being experiences that complement the medical treatment that is given to them in the cancer space and with the oncology professionals. So we, you know, a great example is, you know, we serve thousands of meals a year. Mm-hmm. To not only the patient, but also their caregiver. And then many times they have small children and the family unit looks different for everyone. So, but it's really like that core group of people who are carrying the patient through this journey. We work with a lot of late stage patients that are more advanced stage treatment. And when we look at, you know, what we're able to do with respect to all the different health pillars that we have. So for example, we do some art therapy. We're very specific on mobility. You know, I mean, just being able to ambulate well for cancer patients is part of that journey. Mm-hmm. So we look at physical health, we look at spiritual health, like what is it, where are they, what do they need in their journey? Are they looking at end of life care? You know, these are monumental questions. And monumental concerns that affect very, very young families, with the average age of the person we help being in their mid-30s. So once they come into our program, we ensure that they have a respite within a certain number of days. And then they stay in our program throughout the journey. And we really just look at those kind of health pillars, be able to kind of address them as needed. So, you know, we have people who might donate other small experiences. We have other small experiences where patients, caregivers, and the children come together. We do, you know, quarterly, educational pieces, mm-hmm. for families. So we're just very, very specific. And then, you know, unfortunately, many of the people we do help pass away, and we do what's called a carry-on club for their surviving spouse. And, you know, part of our strategic plan is really to kind of continue to build out, you know, what we're able to do for families through the grieving process. You know, we think it's hard when you first get cancer, but, you know, we find people who have gone from, you know, being able to work every day to, you know, being a single parent, financially under duress, you know, emotionally empty. Mm-hmm. And, you know, having to take care of small children. So it's when you use the word journey, it is a journey for many of our patients. And we're the loving arm during that journey.
It's definitely is so needed. Myself going through it, my mom had breast cancer when I was in college, so I totally understand. How many families since you started in 2000 have you now officially helped as an organization?
I think it's several thousand. I go by more of the people. Like I know we're probably over 11,000 that we serve. Like you know, every family unit is different. And that's just specific. Like that's just with the respite. You know, one thing that we haven't done is think about all the, you know, I do think that when you help an immediate family, you actually help everyone in their community. Mm-hmm. You know, you help them, you know, their neighbors are a part of that journey, you know, the extended family. I've gotten a lot of notes from moms and dads that mm-hmm. we've helped their 30-year-old child, you know, saying, thank you for helping my child. You know, it's Barbara Prochaska's brother, Jim Miller, you know, who says, listen, you know, Barb's one of six. We've done all we can as siblings. You know, what can you do? Mm. So I think that, you know, specifically for the respite piece, we're over 11,000, you know, mm-hmm. probably today, talking about today. But it's, but that the tentacles of that are in the tens of thousands.
Oh, I can only imagine. Now, let's talk about some really exciting news that you recently told me about. Talk about respite and a new center that's opening up and the story behind it and the magic. And I'm just so excited to share this. So why don't you talk a little bit more about what you're doing and what's going to open up this year?
Well, I'm a data person. I was a math major in college. So, you know, like data is important. So we've studied a lot of data since 2005. About respite, and we really tailored our program to that. And one thing that we found is when we send families away collectively, they all have their very, very individual housing accommodations, mm-hmm. and they can spend a lot of time on their own. But there is an element, especially like around the dinner time, where we bring different families together. And the data around having a community of like-minded people around you of all different backgrounds is very, very strong. So we bring collectively groups of 10 families together on respite for the entire 6 days. And these families are, you know, are there different religious affiliations, different financial backgrounds, different geography, different ethnicity, but they're united by that one word, cancer. And they walk in as strangers and they walk out as forever friends. And in analyzing all that data, we recognize that we have an amazing opportunity here to really, really change the continuum of care for cancer patients and their loved ones. And we started looking at that from a data standpoint from 2019. Our board is amazing, and we made a collective decision to explore the construction of a very dedicated respite center that would address, you know, all the different health pillars that that we look at during respite. And we made a decision to partner with Woodlock Resorts and acquire land at Woodlock to build the nation's first respite center for cancer patients that will house 16 families at one time and also have a dedicated volunteer base of 4 additional families that can volunteer because we rely a lot on volunteers and we do some extensive training on that. And we will be breaking ground on that hopefully the fall of 2024.
That is so exciting. You know, Woodlock is an amazing place as it is. It's such a beautiful area in this country. And you know, the fact that you had this idea to put it together and it's coming to fruition. I mean, that is a humongous accomplishment. I hope you know that.
We do. I'm the lucky one that gets to lead for Pete's sake, but the board and like, you know, we have hundreds of volunteers who give it themselves immensely. And we have, you know, thousands of donors who, you know, from $5 to $5,000, like every contribution of every size from every person given with intent from their heart is what propels For Pete's Sake forward. And that's why this respite center is going to be so amazing, because there's going to be so many different ways too that we're going to be able to A, and first and foremost, respond to the needs of the cancer patient, but B, also respond to the needs of all of us as human beings to be able to help someone else in a volunteer capacity. So there's a lot of, there's a lot of synergy. There's been hours and hours dedicated by so many people, including the Kuesendall family at Woodlock, who's who's been amazing. So we're just really excited, about this endeavor and where it's going to take it and really what it can do to cancer care.
Oh, huge. So, absolutely huge. No, but somebody had to be the leader, and that's who you are as a person, individual. And I can only see this is just the beginning of so many things that you're going to accomplish. So it's so cool to see that. But as another female entrepreneur, somebody had to start it. You know, I know you're giving a lot of kudos to other people, but still somebody's still leading it, and that's you.
Well, thank you. Thank you. It's giving me gray hairs, but other than well, but it's all good, right? Listen, like this, God gives us talents. You got to use them. You know, I say that to my kids all the time, right? You have one life to lead. And I think that's the great message. Like, listen, what happened with Pete passing away was wonderful, but he also gave me a great gift.
Yeah. Right?
He gave me the gift on like how to live.
Yeah.
And reprioritize life and reprioritize, you know, the people in your life. And that's the beauty of it. That's the beauty of For Pete's Sake.
Oh, absolutely. Now, I am sure there are a lot of people listening to this episode and somebody has been affected by cancer here and there and want to hear more about this. How do they hear more about this or get in contact with you?
I would say probably first send me an email, just marcy@takeabreakfromcancer.org. Check out our website. And then one thing I really pride ourselves on is we answer the phones. Call us, like 267-708-0510. You know, my colleague Pam will answer the phone. Like I always say whoever's on that other line needs us. That's why they're calling us. So I've been a big fan of having live people on the other end of the phone, because when you're in need or you want to support something, it's like, you know, we are here. We are present and we want to walk alongside that journey.
Which is amazing because I wish a lot of places had a really live customer service nowadays, but you know, that's wishful thinking out there anymore. So it's nice to have another person to talk to right away, because I'm sure even calling you takes a lot of guts to call because they're scared because they don't know what the journey is. And so it's nice to have another warm voice on the other side talking to them too. So kudos for that.
We've also had great calls too from people who want to support us. So,
yeah.
The Givnish family called us years ago. And they've been supporting us 20 plus years. So like, I think we're all about community helping cancer patients.
Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh. Absolutely. You're doing great stuff. And I'm so excited what you're doing. The impact you have is amazing, going from actually just a tax attorney to basically running one of the most successful nonprofits in the Philadelphia place, I would say. It's amazing. So be really proud about that. And the best is just to come for sure. What do you do for fun? Because it sounds as if like you've been so busy your entire life that busy is just the way that life for you. But, you know, do you read?
I do read. I read a lot. I'm an avid reader. My husband will tell you that, my kids. I read. I try to get involved in like different activities. Like I love basketball. Mm-hmm. I was a basketball coach. I like watching all my nieces and nephews play basketball now. Mm-hmm. I like to walk with my friends, I was a cake decorator. I don't do that as much anymore, but I think I really need to get back into that. And then in all fairness, I try to really nourish like my spiritual side, with the church community. That's really, really important to me. I think sometimes leadership can be kind of lonely at the top times, right? But I always try to put my head on the pillow at night and say, God, I did my best, right? Like that's it. And I think in our line of work, you see the vulnerability of life.
Yeah.
Day in and day out. And, they're as difficult as those lessons are, they are amazingly rewarding to put them into action.
Well, I'm glad you're still reading. I know that was a big thing for you when you were younger, and I'm glad you're still doing that and taking time to do that. I think it's harder and harder, but it's also about life and priorities, about what you want to do and what's your priority of the day. But I do believe in faith as well, and I think that helps so much to keep you grounded in life about what's important, what's not important. And then basically getting in contact with what you're trying to do, which is so cool. If you had to have one word, as you could tell other women entrepreneurs out there, what's that one word that you think that person needs to be able to move forward? Because there's a lot of no's along the process.
It's a great question. One word. Just one word. I would say, well, there's two. Can I do two words?
Sure. They all do that.
I say faithful resilience. Mm.
A good one. I like that. I was going to say resilience. I was thinking the same thing.
I think resilience is really where, like, you know, it's hard. Mm-hmm. But you know, you have to reconnect, you know, with yourself and the why of why you're doing it.
Yeah.
And that has to happen, you know, whenever you have like those valleys, but when you're at the top of that mountain and you look down on that valley and you see, you know, what you've been able to do for other people, like that's really that's the pinnacle of, you know, touching the face of God, right? Like, so yeah. Like at the very top. So, and seeing that, but I think it's just faithful resilience. Like, oh yeah, there are a lot of no's along the way and there's a lot of disappointments, but you know, like that's how you grow as a person. Right.
Yeah.
It's a lot of honest conversations. So yeah. Some of the most amazing people I've had are people who've challenged me, that I might not have agreed with them. But I respect what they say, you know, and they remain forever friends.
Yep. Yeah. You have to be that way, but it's so much about like life and the experiences and sharing all that and knowing that other people understand where you're going through, that helps an awful lot as well. So, Marcia, I can't thank you enough for taking the time today to be on the show. Thank you so much and congratulations on all the success that you've done and still to do. And I can't wait to hear more about when everything goes live and everything opens up there. It's going to be amazing. And just think of all the impact of you're going to have out there and so many people. It's just, you know, I hope that makes you sleep a little better in life. I know it would for me. So for sure, you know, it's absolutely.
Well, thank you. And it does. And I'm looking forward to being able to continue to do the good work. So thank you for your support too, Marcia, and your colleagues, and for all that you do too. We it takes a community with a lot of collaboration, and we're happy that you're part of it too. So we appreciate that.
Oh, it's definitely our pleasure. Absolutely. We have so many people that have so many common bonds with this. So it's the least that we can do for sure. And that's another take of Shadow Her Podcast today with our wonderful and dear friend, Marcia Schenkweiler, who is CEO and founder for Pete's Sake and doing so many great things out in the world today. So you too can do great things out in the world. You're doing already by listening to us today. So please like us out there. And, you know, with Shadow Her, it's more about resilient, but it's also about, you know, working on the operations side of the house out there, guys, and really get to know your numbers, get to know basically your business. But, you know, the Shadow Her is like, don't give up. We're there. We're going to help you get through all this. Until next time, Shadow Her. Take care, guys.